House of Blue Lights. House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Thursday, May 18, 2017. And before we start, today is Lindsay's last day with us today. Lindsay Free. She's moving on down to San Antone. So. Oregon's losing a great.
Remember the Alamo.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
And do we have a replacement yet?
Looking for a job?
I know we couldn't replace her.
We're just going to have to shut down.
No. Representative Weil, you could do both jobs.
It's like,
oh, that might keep me awake. I guess that'd be
it's like the grand jury recording. All you have to do is push a button.
That's right.
Cost anything.
No, but now we're going to make Lindsay feel bad.
I have to stop.
We need,
stop.
I
have to quit my editorial snark. open a public hearing on Senate Bill 493.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Senate Bill 493 expands the crime of assault in the fourth degree to include criminally negligent conduct that causes serious physical injury to a vulnerable user of a public way by means of a motor vehicle. There are no amendments, and there is a minimal fiscal and no revenue impact.
Okay, thank you. And Senator Prozaski wanted to come testify, but he got called to the governor's office, so he's not here. Please go ahead, Tim.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Tim Colahan, Executive Director for the Oregon District Attorneys Association, testifying in support of Senate Bill 493. As you've heard, this will expand slightly assault in the fourth degree as a Class A misdemeanor to cover those situations where a vulnerable user of a highway suffers serious physical injury by a person operating a motor vehicle who is using criminal negligence in the operation of the motor vehicle. The problem under current law is that in order to constitute a crime under current law, the state has to prove that the injury was caused recklessly, and reckless conduct in many of these cases is a very difficult standard to make. Usually that requires evidence of erratic driving, speeding, there's drugs on board, alcohol on board, and the types of cases that this would cover would be those cases where that you have none of those factors and you've got a situation where most commonly as a case out of Morrow County where an individual simply is driving down I-84 and is not paying attention and simply drifts off the highway, goes into a coned off area and hits a highway worker where they're seriously injured, and these are life-threatening injuries. The other thing that this bill would do is it would allow district attorney's offices to provide victim services to these individuals, because currently, unless there is a crime involved, DA's offices cannot provide victim services, nor do they qualify for crime victims compensation through the state of Oregon. So it's a small change in the law. It will cover those situations because at the present time, if the state cannot prove recklessness, virtually the only thing that the state can charge is a violation of careless driving, and that simply does not provide services to the victims, and it doesn't provide accountability for the conduct. So.
Okay, thank you. Representative
Greenock. For a non-attorney, would you help me understand criminal negligence?
As opposed to reckless conduct means that the person, that there is a, look at the definitions real quick, representatives, so I'm okay.
Disregard for the rights and safety of others.
Yes. Criminal negligence is simply being unaware of a substantial risk of harm from the behavior that you're engaging in.
So even though it's called criminal negligence, it's not intent is not involved in criminal negligence.
It's not intentional conduct. It's criminal negligence is the lowest standard of culpability under Oregon law. The next step is no culpability whatsoever.
Criminal negligence is
didn't
have recklessness.
Can I ask the formal definition of criminal negligence?
Yes. Criminal negligence, sorry, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Criminal negligence is when a person fails to be aware of a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the result will occur or that the circumstance exists. So the big difference between criminal negligence and recklessness is in recklessness, the person is aware of and disregards the risk. And in criminal negligence, it is a risk that they probably should have been aware of, but they were not aware of. So person fails to be aware of a substantial and unjustifiable risk that a result would occur or the circumstances exist. So this would be looking at like the probably the nature of the conduct of engaging in the driving.
The issue, failing to be aware that if you drift off and hit somebody, that's criminal negligence because you're not aware that you could have drifted off and hit somebody?
Failing to be aware of the circumstances that are around you. So for, I would think with recklessness, especially with the public awareness today of alcohol intoxication and accidents driving, I think you would have a lot of courts say, even that if you're drunk and in a car accident, that that's reckless behavior that most people or all people are aware of. If you drink and drive, you can seriously injure somebody, even though you're not doing it intentionally. Whereas criminal negligence, when you're not aware of the risk, it might be, as the witness was talking about, you're not paying attention to what you're doing, or you're getting distracted, putting on makeup or something, and you veer off the road.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess this isn't the time to deal with this particular issue, but it seems to me any time you cause an accident, you obviously weren't aware of what you did would cause an accident. I mean, it seems to me we're creating a this is assault four, I think, right?
Correct. Class A misdemeanor assault
misdemeanor. Up to a year in prison. The notion, the difference between being reckless and being criminally negligent seems to me, or just being, I mean, just having an accident. Seems to me causing an accident by this definition would be criminally negligent. You could be charged with that because you weren't aware that what you had done would cause what it did.
Well, Chair Barker, Representative Greenlick, I will tell you that criminal negligence certainly is not a strict liability type situation at all. There still needs to be evidence showing that there was a substantial risk involved. And these cases are not going to be filed simply because an accident occurred. There is still going to be a necessity for investigation and a district attorney reviewing the evidence to determine whether or not that the state can prove, in fact, that this person failed to be aware of a substantial risk. The types of conduct that I could see it applied to would be an individual who's driving a car and is extremely tired, drowsy driving. Perhaps they have either ran off the road or had opportunities to pull over prior to the scene of the accident. They didn't do so. There's no alcohol, no drugs, no speed, but they were driving the car while they were extremely tired and an accident occurred. I think those are the type of situations, but I can assure you that DAs will continue to review these cases, and there are some accidents that are accidents, and there will not be crimes filed in those cases.
Thank you, Chair Barker. I'm curious, just based on that answer you just gave, how would you actually know if the person was nodding off or all of a sudden went into an unexpected sneezing episode because a hay truck drove by? And, you know, I mean, either of those could cause somebody to swerve. How would you actually determine that?
Chair Barker, Representative Stark, it's based upon the investigation that occurs, a good police investigation where an interview of the driver and other witnesses at the scene to determine what happened, what occurred prior to the accident itself, and getting a clear history of all the factors involved.
Thank you, Chair Barker. And then another, as I'm reading through this, is there any distinction in the consequence, if you are convicted of this, based off of the degree of damage done to the individual? So you nod off and you swerve off and you your mirror hits somebody's shoulder and they're bruised up and have pain and physical therapy versus you nod off and you hit someone and they're in a wheelchair for life. Is there any distinction that's made?
Chair Barker, Representative Stark, this crime, this bill would require evidence and proof of serious physical injury. And serious physical injury is injury that is either life-threatening or is disfiguring or causes injury to a bodily organ of some kind. If it's just physical injury and it doesn't arise to the level of serious physical injury, it would not fall under a misdemeanor crime.
Okay, thank you.
If you broke their leg, it would not count. That's not serious physical injury. Any other further questions? Mr. Campbell?
Chair Barker and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell, here today on behalf of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, and I won't say much more because the conversation, I think, has covered most of the ground. I would just say that, you know, one of the things that we really like about this has to do with the victims that are involved in these kind of cases, because the support services that are available if this bill were to pass are very important. I mean, the impacts on the victims are profound. We've talked about serious physical injury. Those are major impacts. And the ability to offer them victim services and resources is a valuable part of the bill. So with that, I want to thank the chair and the committee for hearing the bill.
Thank you. Representative Vile.
I'm really glad I'm not required to sit as a judge and figure out when this case has arisen and when it hasn't. And I'm going to support the bill for the reason that Kevin just talked about, which is the victim piece of it. I am uncomfortable, however, with it. And I think this is maybe a good time to put on the record the fact that we are entering a whole new world with respect to vehicles. We're going to have vehicles on the road shortly that don't have a driver. Someone, however, may be responsible for programming that vehicle in a certain way, and are we going to deal with criminally negligent behavior that has to do with how a vehicle is programmed? I think this may be something that gets us the victim's assistance for now, but I really hope that we revisit this kind of bill very soon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 493. Open a work session on Senate Bill 493.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 493A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 493A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Please.
I'm going to be a no on this bill. Excuse me. I'm not satisfied that this issue of criminal negligence is clear enough. I do worry about victims that are injured. That's a very important issue, that they have services for them. But the distinction between unaware of something and being aware of it and violating it, I think, is a big problem. I think if you're getting to the point where somebody is going to spend a year in prison or a year in jail over something, there ought to be some intent involved in it. I think this is the sort of backward notion, the notion of, I should have known driving my car off the side of the road and hitting somebody would be a problem, but I didn't. Well, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. Thank you. Call the roll, please. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chair Barker. You know, I have this bill, maybe it's just a matter of not processing it fast enough or being around this terminology long enough. It seems strange to me that if something is an accident, is without, you know, intent and happens, that we would increase a penalty, because if it's an accident, how is increasing that penalty going to curb the behavior? And so it seems futile in that effort. And the idea of increasing a penalty for someone who does something accidentally, if I'm understanding it correctly, so that that victim could receive services, that seems backward as well. It seems like we would find a way to get those victims those services, you know, and I understand that the need for connecting it to the crime victim services and having to have a crime for that to happen. It just seems like a backward way to do it to me. So just
comments. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I know just a few seconds ago I said I was going to be a yes on this bill, and it, because of the victim's rights piece, but honestly, upon reflection, I've got the same problem. Okay. I just can't quite get there on this and feel like we need to do some more work in making sure that this is a bill that would be clear before it were prosecuted.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I go through the measure history here, maybe I'm missing it. Because I don't have a comfort level with the bill yet, and I can't quite articulate what that lack is. But I'm noticing not a lot of testimony on the Senate side from anybody. OCDLA didn't weigh in on this that I can see, and I find that unusual also.
Okay, thank you. We just got a face discussion. Senator, would you like to come up and if you maybe somebody might have a question for you there.
Mr. Chair, Floyd Brzezinski, State Senator, District 4, parts of Lane and Douglas County. I'm here if you have any questions. I apologize. I was in the governor's office.
I explained that before.
And so I'm not sure if there's anything I can assist with. If you have any questions, I think the presentation you probably heard was covered most everything. OCDLA, they did not take a active position on this. What I remember, if you remember, we had this bill last year. And the question that came from the House side is the severity of the sanctions being a felony. And so we just basically backed that off to being a misdemeanor to try to give it a different perspective.
Please.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee, Representative Springer. To follow up on that a little bit, Gail Meyer from OCDLA did testify in the hearing on the Senate side. One of the concerns she expressed with it in the Assault 4, if I'm remembering correctly, I don't want to misquote her, was just unintended consequences. If you look at the Assault 4 statute, there's a component that usually goes to domestic violence crimes. If a minor child witnesses it, it elevates it up to a C felony. And so she had a concern if we're having this serious car accident and there's a minor, is that going to elevate it to a C felony as well? So that's why this is the A version. We did an amendment that's in this A version that specifies that this doesn't apply to the elevators, that it will always just be an A misdemeanor. But that was the concern that OCDLA had raised on the Senate side.
Mr. Chair and Representative Springer, I apologize. That's correct. She and I did talk about it, and her concern is, as you've heard from Ms. Perez, is that they did not want to have the unintended consequences that a child who is on the side of the street seeing the accident occur, that somehow would be the elevator and push this into a felony. And so we've made it very clear that the portion for the elevation has to be directly related to basically a DV situation.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Committee stand at ease for a minute. And we have a motion before us and call the roll, please. I'm sorry.
One last
one
question.
More, okay.
Thank you, Chair. This is probably for counsel or somebody
counsel's
smarter
here
than I am. I'm still learning, you know, as far as criminal and civil courts and so forth. In a scenario like this, someone veers off the road and now you have a severely injured person. Is there anything that keeps that person from being able to seek some sort of compensation from the driver?
Ah, the good old
Chair Barker, members of the committee, no. Obviously, if you're at fault in an accident, you're still going to be civilly liable for that. And I think that's important to notice the distinction between civil negligence and criminal negligence. Well, kind of, it's sometimes hard to articulate different factual situations, but there is a difference between mere negligence, which is in the civil law, versus criminal negligence, and that's probably why they call it criminal negligence and stress that. And so a person still can have an accident and not be criminally negligent and just civilly liable for whatever damages they cause. So sometimes they talk about criminal negligence as being negligence plus. And so again, it's hard to articulate, and you'd have to go back and look at case law for when courts decided something is criminal negligence versus not to be able to better articulate it beyond the statutory definition. But yes, even if somebody's not acting criminally negligent and they're just negligent and responsible for the accident, they would be civilly responsible for that.
And so that individual who's injured still has an opportunity, whether it's insurance or through an individual claim, to receive financial assistance for the things that they're enduring?
Yes, assuming the person has insurance coverage and or that the person themselves has financial assets.
Thank you.
And that the victim has the money to get a, hire an attorney to do that. In court costs. Okay, call the roll, please.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Greenlee?
No. No.
Representative Leininger?
Yes.
Representative Post?
Yes.
Representative Sanchez?
Yes.
Representative Springer?
Yes.
Representative Stark?
No.
Representative Vile?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Williamson?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries.
I'll carry it.
Sure. Representative Olson will be the curator. Thank you, committee. I'll help you write that. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 83.
Thank you, Chair Barker. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 83A returns review of Public Utility Commission orders in non-contested cases to the Marion County Circuit Court. There are no amendments, and there is a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Good afternoon, Chair Barkers, members of the committee. My name is Michael Grant. I'm the Chief Administrative Law Judge at the Public Utility Commission. This bill is simply designed to fix an inconsistency in statute related to the judicial review of Public Utility Commission orders. The appeal of our orders has a unique history. For many years, our contested case rate orders were treated differently than those from other agencies. Instead of being reviewed first by the Court of Appeals, our orders first went to the Marion County Circuit Court for review. With the support of the Marion County Circuit Court, we succeeded in 2005 getting legislation to make the appeal of our contested case orders consistent with that of other agencies under the Administrative Procedures Act. Although the intent of the 2005 legislation was limited to the appeal of contested case orders, that is, those orders that were issued after a formal trial-like process that included an evidentiary hearing, we recently discovered that language in the 2005 bill inadvertently made all commission orders contested case orders for purposes of appeal. This includes orders issued after an informal open meeting process. Having the Court of Appeals first review these informal orders is a problem because they are issued with no evidentiary record and contain no findings of fact and conclusions of law for the court to consider. So Senate Bill 83 is intended to fix that problem and fulfill the original intent of the 2005 legislation to make the judicial review of the commission orders the same as other agencies. So like other agencies, our contested case orders will be reviewed by the Court of Appeals, and our informal orders, which are referred to under the APA as orders other than contested case orders, will be first reviewed by the Marion County Circuit Court. There's no known opposition to the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Anything, any questions for Mr. Brandt? Okay, thank you very much. Close the public hearing and open work session on Senate Bill 83A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 83A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 83A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any questions? Seeing none, so ordered. Open a work session.
I'll carry.
I'll do it.
Representative Professor Gorsuch will carry the bill and explain it carefully. Open a work session on Senate Bill 34.
Is that where you're
Thank you, Chair Barker. Members of the committee, you previously heard Senate Bill 34 on April 27th. It requires vehicles to move over or slow down if it is not safe to move over when another vehicle is stopping and displaying warning lights. You now have the Dash 1 amendment, which allows a driver to choose whether to slow down or move over, regardless of whether it is safe to move over. The Dash 1 amendment has a minimal fiscal and a minimal revenue impact.
Okay, we have an amendment before us.
I was wondering if maybe Paul Mather or Leah Horner could come up and just kind of describe a little bit. I know that Leah had mentioned initially, Mr. Chair, about that this model is going to be actually really similar to what Idaho is doing right now.
Okay, thank you. That'd be great. Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator. I was before you explaining the bill a few weeks ago. We had a little discussion on this topic just to clarify drivers' responsibilities when coming up to the circumstance, whether they're obligated to move over first and slow down, or whether they're required or able to slow down in their lane and comply with the statute. The amendments clarify that and make it clear for the driver that they have that choice of either slowing down or moving over. We did take a look at several laws. In fact, I just saw one, I believe today or yesterday, that state of Nevada passed a very similar statute as well.
Okay, any questions?
I do, Mr.
Chair. Okay, please.
The current law relates to police vehicles, and it requires you either slow down or get out of the way if you get out of the way if you can. This choice, will it amend to that law as well, or are we in a different situation when we come to a police car than when we come to a tow truck?
Well, the way I read the law, Mr. Chair and Senator Greenlick, and Paul can jump in here, you're wanting to expand this to a disabled vehicle as well that has its flashing lights on out there.
Right. Right.
So the capture on it is that it now gives a choice to the driver as they're approaching that vehicle, or the disabled vehicle, or a police officer, or emergency vehicle, whatever the situation is, that if they want, they move over, they do, but they don't have to slow down. Well, if they stay in the right-hand lane, the lane adjacent to where the vehicle's disabled or whatever, they have to be 5 miles under the speed limit.
The original
question is, under the current statute, right, they do not have that option. They're supposed to move right over if they can't move over. The Dash 1 Amendment changed the current law as well as this.
Without the amendment, you had to move over, and now you can slow down.
I understand.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green.
It applied to the broader statute rather than to the expansion, and the answer was yes.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 Amendments into Senate Bill 34.
Representative Williamson moves the Dash 1 Amendments into Senate Bill 34. Is there any further discussion? Are there any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 34 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 34 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And we'll have the good Representative Olson carry that one. Has done a lot of work on it. Committee, stand adjourned. Thank you. Committee, stand adjourned. Thank you.